Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Daniel Miller, host of the Los Angeles Times podcast, Larger Than Life, and this is OPP.
God bless everybody, and welcome to another episode of OPP, Other People's Podcasts, is America's number one discovery platform that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is Los Angeles Times business reporter Daniel Miller, host of the amazing podcast Larger Than Life. From LA Times Studios, the team that brought you Dirty John and Man in the Window is now bringing you Larger Than Life, a docuseries about Big Willie Robinson, a 6'6", muscle-bound street racer who preached peace a quarter mile at a time. Cops and criminals, movie stars and miscreants, even Blood and Crips. Out of the drag strip, Big Willie can get them all to see eye to eye, easing tensions and making LA a safer and more unified place. In this episode, I got to learn more about Daniel. We get into his podcaster's picks, and of course, we get into his dope show, Larger Than Life. Let me introduce you to Daniel Miller. Boom, there we go. Daniel, what's up, man? How's everything going?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me.
You know, after you hurt my heart here because of my Knicks hat, I don't know how I feel right now, but I like you.
Well, it comes from a place of love. As a Lakers fan, we've had some tough years. So I have a lot of empathy for you as a Knicks fan.
I mean, tough years. I mean, how many titles?
I won't even count them out for you one by one, but you guys have titles too. I know it's in the past, but you know, look, I'm always looking for the bright side of things.
Yeah, I think Nixon was president last time we won some titles.
Yeah, we can boast a title or two in the Obama era.
Are you from LA?
I am. I'm from Los Angeles, born and raised.
Yo, what's the vibe like in LA, man? Because I know that I'm from Virginia and I moved to New York City and I was able to see a large, I guess I was a part of the wave of the change of seeing New York City develop into this new thing and Brooklyn develop into this new thing. But what about for yourself? Like, how's LA changed?
Well, I think LA is having this incredible moment. Our food scene is just next level these days. Art and architecture as well. It's a fascinating time to live here. We have such a diverse city. You know, I wouldn't trade it for anywhere in the world.
Tell me your journey of how you got over to the LA Times.
So I grew up in Los Angeles. Like I said, I grew up reading the newspaper every morning at, you know, the breakfast table. And I would always first turn to that sports section. I used to read a columnist named Jim Murray, legendary columnist here at the LA Times. And, you know, from an early age, I wanted to be a writer. And the LA Times was always this dream. I joined the paper in 2013, started covering the entertainment industry, which is something that I had done in the years prior as well. I worked at the Hollywood Reporter covering the business of Hollywood. And so that's what brought me to the LA Times. And I spent about 5 years doing that here. It's an incredible beat here in Los Angeles. Obviously, show business is kind of the lifeblood of the city, and there's no shortage of great stories to tell. So really enjoyed that.
What part of LA did you grow up in?
So I grew up in West LA and went to UCLA for college, where I wrote for the Daily Bruin, the school paper. So I really did stay local. Covered sports for the Daily Bruin, covered the football team, mediocre football team at the time. You know, I think that it gives me a unique perspective here at the newspaper, being from here, having a sense of how the city has changed over the decades. And we explore some of that in the Larger Than Life podcast. You know, the main subject, Big Willie Robinson, this legendary street racer, his heyday was before I was born. But parts of his story, you know, do take place in an era that I recall. And, you know, I like to think that I can bring a little something to the story because of that.
One thing, too, when you grow up in an area, I joke with my friends here in New York City, I say, man, you're at an advantage, disadvantage, because you live in such a great city. that where else do you go? You know what I mean? Like, New York offers so much and LA offers so much. Like, from growing up in LA, what has been the biggest difference in LA from when you grew up and to now? Because I know a lot of people from New York have moved out there too in recent times.
Sure. Well, I think this might sound a little wonky, but it's true. I have to say, transportation and the way people get around the city has vastly changed in the last decade or so. I mean, we had a subway that was built decades ago, and I think it took quite a while for it to gain real traction. But look, freeway traffic isn't going away, and our public transportation system has continued to grow. And the reality is, you can get a train in Los Angeles and head all over the Southland, really. And I think that's really opened up the city to people. I mean, look, for a time I lived in Hollywood and I could walk 10 minutes and get on the subway and take it to work in downtown LA. That's an experience that I think a lot of people don't associate with LA. And I think that it's really helped change the city. We're out here in El Segundo at the LA Times headquarters, and there's light rail that comes within, you know, I don't know, a quarter mile of our office. And I think that's really freeing. I mean, you know all the cliches about traffic being a nightmare and nobody walks in LA, but I don't really think that's really true anymore. And I think that's really changed the dynamics in this city. So I don't know, that's a little bit like of a nerdy answer, but I think it's true.
How's the transition been from doing, you know, a print work and to now doing this audio medium of podcasting? How's that transition been for you?
Oh, it's been a fascinating journey to learn how to put together a podcast and immerse myself in the world of audio storytelling. I've really loved it, I have to say. There's kind of an intimacy with audio storytelling that I think is unmatched, and a chance to really create a world, whether it's via music or the voices you hear, that's just, you know, something you cannot do in print for obvious reasons. I will say that, you know, the transition, I think, was relatively smooth, really because of the incredible people that I got to work with on this project. The LA Times had support from a production company called Neon Hum Media, which is run by Jonathan Hirsch. And the team that Jonathan put together really made this easy for me. Our editor was Catherine St. Louis. Our producer was Grant Irving. And, you know, whether it was tips on how to restructure a sentence so it sounded right when you said it aloud, or just even the way, you know, we thought about music for this story. I mean, there was just a remarkable team that was part of Larger Than Life that made it so smooth.
I want to take this kind of back in the day before we get to the current moment. But how did you first discover the medium of podcasting in general?
Sure. So I am not embarrassed to say I discovered it via Serial. I think probably like many people, many Americans, frankly, Serial was the, you know, the entry point for me. I was captivated by it, and then as a just as a listener, but then of course as a journalist, the level of storytelling and the way that, you know, that tale was teased out over, you know, this multi-episode arc, you know, it really resonated with me. I would say the podcast though that for me really solidified my interest in the medium was S-Town. I just love the sort of slow burn nature of it, the twists, and it was just the world that the creators built was just so evocative, this sort of Southern Gothic world. I just, you know, I was hooked.
Was there an instant moment where you realized you would want to start a podcast or you would want to step into this world?
You know, I have to say it came with this project on Big Willie Robinson. It wasn't listening to Serial or S-Town or any of the other podcasts that I became interested in. I certainly admired the medium and I think maybe thought about it in the abstract, but it wasn't until I learned about Big Willie Robinson and his story that I thought, I want to do this.
Yeah, let's get into Big Willie Robinson and Larger Than Life, this new amazing podcast. I listened to the first two episodes yesterday, and I'm a really, really big fan. I wasn't aware of his story. So tell us who Big Willie Robinson is.
Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate you listening. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Big Willie Robinson was an underground LA legend. He was a street racer who pushed a vision of peace through wheels, and it actually worked. He eventually got buy-in from cops and politicians and the powers that be in LA, and the city came together to give him the tools he needed to make street racing safer. A lot of his story takes place in the wake of the 1965 Watts riots, which I think really revealed for all the world just how fractured and damaged LA was. This was largely a segregated city, a city whose police force was known for its brutality and racism. And Big Willie pushes a message of peace, and it really resonated. You know, his heyday was in the 60s and 70s and 80s. He died in 2012, and his group, the Brotherhood of Street Racers, lives on. You know, it's an interesting message because I think these days it can seem kind of Pollyanna, the idea that cars can heal wounds and bridge divides. But, you know, as the podcast lays out, it did work.
A lot of folks aren't familiar, you know, me being a New Yorker, I'm not familiar with car culture and what it's like in LA. What is the significance of car culture in Los Angeles?
Sure. So I think you could argue that LA is the, you know, car culture capital of the country, if not the world, whether it's, you know, the muscle cars of the 60s, the low riders of the 80s and 90s, a lot of the culture that we all know, culture that you've seen in movies like the Fast and Furious. It was created here. Look, we are the city of the car, and people express themselves via their rides here. It sounds a little cheesy, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
And look, you're spending an hour or two on your commute, maybe. You want to be comfortable. You want to have fun. You want to be fast. You want to be able to express yourself. And I think that that's kind of the backdrop of this podcast. We do get to explore Southern California car culture and the history of it. You know, street racing, of course, here. We've got, you know, at least late at night, we've got some wide open boulevards. You know, that really developed here too.
What was the light bulb moment for you that you were going to cover Big Willie Robinson and tell his story?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Story. Why this story?
So I first learned of Big Willie Robinson in spring 2017. I was out at a dusty car lot in the San Fernando Valley for a story entirely unrelated to the street racer. And I stumbled upon one of his old race cars. It was being stored on this old car lot. And I learned a little bit about him then. The car was in bad shape, battered, you know, it was missing its roof. And when I, you know, heard about him, I was so intrigued because here was this outsized character who accomplished so much, and yet this race car was kind of wasting away on this car lot, and I just had to know more. That isn't really when I thought that this should be a podcast, though. That came much later when I really began to explore his world, and I kind of immersed myself in some of the music that I, you know, knew he loved. I wound up speaking to a lot of people around him who, you know, would mention names like Curtis Mayfield or the Rascals. And I'd listen to that and I'd drive around the city and I just think, you know, this is an audio story. You want to hear that music. You want to hear that funk, that R&B, that rock and roll. And you also want to hear those fast cars revving their engines. And it sort of became apparent then.
What were the challenges for you? Being this is your first podcast, so was there a learning curve, and what was that learning curve process for you in producing this?
Oh, there was definitely a learning curve. I mean, look, I had to. I mean, forget about the storytelling for audio that I had to learn. I had to learn how to properly record interviews. Right, I had to learn how to properly mic up the exhaust pipe of 1969 Dodge Charger Daytona and record some audio of the car revving and not, you know, bring our producer a file that was totally useless. So there was, you know, technical stuff I had to learn. There was, you know, journalism skills I had to learn. And look, I really loved it. It's kind of rare that, you know, in the middle of your career, you can dive in and get out and, you know, kind of go to school in a way.
How long did it take to make it all possible and gather all that information?
So I began reporting the story in earnest in, I would say, May of 2018. And the first couple months of it were just so much fun. I was, you know, out there with my recorder talking to anybody I could find you know, multiple interviews a day. I traveled to Indianapolis for a car auction. I went to Chicago for an interview with a street racer. I was really learning about this world. A big part of that process was hanging out with and interviewing members of Big Willie's Brotherhood of Street Racers. Like I said, the group is still alive, and they were instrumental in helping me understand this story. So they have monthly gatherings at a clubhouse on South Central Avenue in South LA, and I went to some of those gatherings and, you know, got to know the story better there. You know, by the end of last year, the reporting, you know, was mostly done. And then, you know, we really got down to the business of making this podcast.
Does he have existing family members, you know, children or a wife? Or
he does. And eventually, the podcast does explore that. Early on in the show, you do hear from a handful of relatives, a brother and a sister. His wife, Tamiko Robinson, is a huge part of the story. She's also passed away. She died before him, about a half decade before Willie. They did not have children. Again, it's something we eventually get into in the podcast. But connecting with the family that I could interview was really key to understanding him, especially his early years. Willie grew up in a big New Orleans family. He was born in 1942. And obviously, Louisiana was segregated at that time. And I think a lot of the lessons he learned from his childhood were a big part of, you know, shaping his worldview.
How many episodes are going to be a part of the series?
So there are 7 episodes of this series. The first 2 came out on Tuesday, July 9th, and it's been really gratifying to see the response so far.
Because from the story of Big Willie Robinson, you know, a lot of times that, you know, I'm learning a lot of things about myself through other people, through the process of interviewing. But what did you learn about Big Willie Robinson on a deeper level that you took away from him as a person, not actually meeting him and knowing him?
Sure, that's a good question. So Big Willie was a complicated man, and, you know, he left behind a tangle of questions. But his dream was simple. And I said it before, he believed in the unifying bond of fast cars, and he made that work. And I have to say that it's very easy to be cynical these days. I know I can be guilty of it, but I think that his story can actually teach us to be less cynical and to kind of embrace that optimism that those divides can be bridged and people can come together. And I think that that's what I choose to take away from his story.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. So Daniel, we're at a part of the show that I call our podcaster's picks, where I ask today's subject to give me 3 podcasts that you enjoy and that you love and describe them to us. So give me 3 podcasts that you enjoy, my man.
Sure. I'm very excited to do this. I even brought some literature with me.
Okay, let's go. Let's do it.
And I want to say that a couple of these choices definitely are close to home. So the first one I want to talk about is Shut Out, which is a podcast that was released last year by HuffPost. The host is Catherine St. Louis. And the podcast is fantastic. It's about the fight to vote in America. It's about voting rights. And Catherine St. Louis is, of course, the editor on our podcast. So while we were working on Larger Than Life, she was releasing this out into the world. I really can't think of a more timely podcast with an election coming up than this one. So check out Shut Out. Another one that hits close to home, which came out more recently, is a podcast called Throwback from Sports Illustrated. And it's about the rise of women's soccer in America. And it was produced by Grant Irving, who's the producer of Larger Than Life. So this is such a fun podcast. It's about the first ever Women's World Cup in 1991, which people often forget even happened. And it's the story of the U.S. women's national team during that World Cup. And of course, you know, our national team just won the World Cup this past weekend. Another timely podcast, definitely worth checking out. The last one I want to talk about, I have no connection to at all, but I love it. It's called Last Scene. It's from the Boston Globe and WBUR, and it is about the Gardner Museum art heist. I think this is the largest unsolved art heist in history.
Okay.
And it's a trip. You've got art historians talking 1 minute, the next minute you're listening to these hardened criminals talk about how they would have stolen these paintings. Not saying they did it, but how they would have done it. It's a trip. It's a lot of fun.
Wow. With Daniel Miller, before we get out of here, I have one last question. Why do you podcast?
Well, I just think as a storytelling platform, podcasting is fantastic. I mean, the intimacy of hearing those sources' voices, hearing the emotion, hearing the tears, hearing the laughter, it's just fantastic. As a longtime print journalist, it's really freeing to be able to let audiences into a story in a unique way. And I think, you know, with Larger Than Life and the story of Big Willie Robinson, we have an amazing opportunity to share the slice of LA history, but also take them into this world, LA of the 60s and 70s, when, you know, something as simple as street racing could really help heal a city.
Wow. Daniel Miller, thank you so much for taking the time to be on OPP, man. I'm really a big fan of Larger Than Life. And I'm already, you know, the first two episodes in. I can't wait to catch the next five. And you're the man, dog. Go Knicks.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Go Lakers. And I'll be tuning in when they're in the Garden next time.
Hey, Lakers, Clippers, all that, man. It's a good time in La La Land.
For sure. But although I don't talk about the Clippers, got to say, Lakers for life.
Okay, there we go. There we go. They don't exist. Thank you so much, but I appreciate you.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of OPP. And to our special guest, Daniel Miller. I'll be sure to provide the links to his podcast, Larger Than Life, in the description of this episode. This episode was mixed by Mark Bird. This episode was edited by Bradley Naiman. Music for this episode was provided by Richie Quake. And I want to send a special thank you to my friends over at the LA Times, Clint Schaff, Vanessa Kerwin, and Allison Farias for making this interview possible. Lastly, before we get out of here, be sure to check out my other show, Silent Giants, which highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. And I'll be sure to provide the links for that in the description of this episode as well. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. God bless y'all. Till next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.